Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Demonstrations continued in several US cities over the weekend in response to the decision by the Supreme Court to overturn Roe versus Wade. That decision ended constitutional protections for abortion that had been in place for nearly 50 years. For more on this, I'm joined on the line by the Business Post US correspondent Marion McKeown. Marion, thank you very much for joining us. But before we hear about reaction across the United States, and there has been plenty since this decision was handed down, remind us what states will be affected by this.
Well, potentially all 50 states can be affected by this, because it's now what the court has done is said that there's no constitutional right to abortion, and it's basically up to the individual states to decide if they want to allow abortion within their states, and if they do, what restrictions they want to place on it. So in some states, like California, New York, for example, they're already talking about changing the law to codify the right to abortion within the law, which, you know, it wasn't there previously. And in other states, up to about 26 states, abortions will be either banned completely, except in the case of danger to the mother's life, and in some states in the cases of rape or incest. And then there will be a sliding scale. So there are about 26 states that are expected to outlaw or severely restrict abortion. Of those states, 13 had trigger laws that basically said, as soon as the court decision, these laws were passed in anticipation of what the court did decide, of the Supreme Court majority decision. And they basically said that as soon as the decision dropped, that within between 5 and 30 days, they would outlaw abortion within their states. And then you had other states that already had introduced bans. And then you have states that had what they called zombie laws, where they had laws on their books that they never repealed, you know, in 1972, when the Supreme Court said that women had a constitutional right to abortion. So there's a whole, I mean, this is where one of the big problems is that there's now so much legal uncertainty. And normally, what the courts try to do is to introduce consistency in the law, in the national laws, where there is uncertainty or conflict. But what this has really done is just create a state of legal chaos, because every state will now be making its own decisions. No doubt dozens of states will have those decisions appealed again to the Supreme Court. And it really seems that when you disturb half a century of settled law without any fundamental change in society or any demand for a review of that law, that you really do unearth a lot of problems.
And there were protests over the weekend. Now, I know many of them were peaceful, but they're extremely divisive, and we're expecting more to come as this thing sinks into people's consciousness and people realise what's happening here. Tell me a little bit, or characterise what you saw and heard over the weekend.
Well, you know, one of the things that is really strange to see is that the Supreme Court forever, it's the most magnificent building. It's not the biggest building in Washington, but it's sort of just behind the Capitol building. And forever, people could walk into the Supreme Court, have a look around. There would be three or four Capitol police kind of standing around, looking pretty relaxed. Now the court has been surrounded by the same fencing and concrete blocks that were put up after January 6th. And it really shows how much the court now, it shows how the court is isolated, and how it also now, the Supreme Court was always the most highly regarded of the American institutions, far more highly regarded than the executive and the White House or Congress. And now that trust in the court has plummeted. And you know, there initially on Friday morning outside the court in Washington, it was mainly supporters who really approved of what the court had done, and they got there early in anticipation. They brought a DJ, there was music, they were blowing bubbles, they were dancing, and a lot of them were young women who had been bussed in from universities, from Catholic universities and schools. So there is a considerable group of young women and young men who have joined with this conservative movement and who regard themselves as the anti-Roe v. Wade generation. They were soon sort of pretty much drowned out, I would say, by protesters who then arrived. Now, the protests in Washington were peaceful. Around the country, some of them were. There was an incident in Rhode Island where a policeman, an off-duty policeman who was running for a seat in the Rhode Island State Senate, punched a current Rhode Island senator in the face, a black woman. And, you know, so it feels like America at the moment in Los Angeles, well, that there's just such a tension that, you know, it comes on the back of so many things. You know, the January 6th hearings seem to be having a sort of a slow trickle-down effect now, where people are saying, my God, you know, what did all that we heard really happen? There seems to be still, on one part, a strong desire not to believe that Donald Trump could have been capable of, you know, planning to overturn the election on several different levels, as the committee is now alleging. So there's a lot of tension. The gun law that the court overturned was also met with outrage. And again, the court has been accused of inconsistency, where on the one hand, in the Roe v. Wade and Casey, in overturning that in the Dobbs versus Jackson case, they were saying, look, it's up to the states to have the rights. Whereas in the New York gun case, they're saying, no, the states don't have the right to regulate gun control. So it seems, I think the real shame for the court is it's now seen as a hyper-political body, that there's a conservative supermajority which is really taking its cue from the very conservative elements of the Republican Party. And, you know, when the court isn't seen as an objective referee, that does bring a lot of problems of its own as well.
Well, there's no doubt that this will be an election issue when it comes to those midterms. And you mentioned that potential strategy of making abortion rights a federal law. Is that the plan that President Joe Biden has now?
Oh no, that there's no way that will happen now. That ship has sailed. What could happen, though, and this is what there are concerns about, is it's possible that there could be a nationwide ban introduced on abortion. For example, if the Senate, it's widely expected that Democrats will lose the House in September. It's widely expected. The Senate is more on knife edge, but it's also possible that Republicans could take control of the Senate. Now, if they did, they could, in theory, pass legislation in the House banning abortion nationwide. And if Mitch McConnell, who would become majority leader again, decided to break the filibuster, then it's possible that could become law. Now, Joe Biden, of course, would never sign it, but it would be the first steps towards that. It would not be possible for the Democrats at this point to introduce a law basically codifying Roe v. Wade, because Roe v. Wade has now been overturned. If it's brought back to the Supreme Court, it could be, any such law could be overturned, but also they just haven't got the muscle. They haven't got the muscle in the Senate. They haven't got the muscle in the House at the moment, even though they are slightly in the majority.
So what is President Biden saying he will do to try and counteract this?
Well, honestly, it's all a little bit sort of impotent, I think, really. What he's saying is that the Department of Justice is looking at ways of making sure that there will be no laws introduced that would criminalize women who travel to a different state, who travel outside their own state. So let's say a woman in Texas traveled to California. They want to introduce laws saying that they could not be extradited back from California if the Texan Attorney General so decided. They're also saying that they would introduce, you know, funding systems, and that there will be protections introduced for telemedicine. About half of the abortions in the United States at the moment are medicated abortions, which is when women who are up to 10 weeks pregnant can take pills, and that's what induces the abortion. Now, these aren't available everywhere, and unfortunately, in a lot of places where people are very, very poor, because of course this change is going to disproportionately affect poorer women and women from minority groups, the kind of women really who cannot afford to travel to California for an abortion, who can't afford to take 3 or 4 days off work. It won't affect wealthier women and women who are comfortable, but it will have a very detrimental effect on women who are already living on the minimum wage, who may already have health issues but don't have good health care, who may already have several children and literally just cannot afford to have more children. But, you know, I think that all of these things, you know, the sense is at the moment, as I say, the Democrats seem to be focusing more on how they can turn this to their advantage in the midterms rather than what they can do. And as I say, so far they've been saying we'll protect telemedicine, the right of women to speak to doctors virtually to get abortion advice, they'll protect the right to travel. But I think that, again, these things will only really have a positive impact on women who can afford already, as I say, to travel and who can afford better medicine anyway.
You touched on gun control there. Another very confused issue in the United States and has been for many years. But on Saturday, the president signed this sweeping gun violence bill in decades. Now, take us through what that means and what's happening on the other side.
It's the first legislation on the plus side. It's the first legislation, gun control legislation, that has been introduced bipartisan in 30 years. But it's really not that sweeping. It sort of tinkers around the edges. Now, the Democrats are saying, well, half a loaf is better than no bread, and it's better to get something than nothing. And, you know, I think you do have to accept that. But it basically, it offers money to up to $750 million in funding to introduce red flag laws and to which would be laws in states where people who literally, as it suggests, their mental behavior or their behavior suggesting that they shouldn't be allowed to have guns, to allow them to be taken to court and to have an order saying we want their guns taken away. But of course, in most cases where these things happen, there isn't necessarily that much warning. By the time you get a court date and you get in there and you get the gun taken, it's very likely that anybody who was planning a mass shooting would have already done it, or indeed anybody who's planning to shoot family members or neighbours or other people that they feel violence towards. So to me, that's really a small thing. They're also saying that there'll be better background checks and they'll be expanded, and these platitudes about more funding for mental health care and more funding for school security. But none of these things are really going to prevent somebody who gets hold of an assault weapon and, you know, a magazine that will hold up to 30 bullets from going out and wreaking havoc. Nothing that's introduced in this legislation is really going to, I think, have a discernible impact on the problem of gun violence in America.
So it simply doesn't go far enough, and the problem is trying to get it beyond this line. That's when you run into huge problems.
Exactly. And, you know, even things like what the Democrats asked for, which was, they said, OK, you know what, we won't try. And it doesn't even reduce the age at which you can buy the assault weapon, increase it from 18 to 21. You can't buy a drink in America until you're 21. But, you know, of course, you can buy an assault weapon. What they said was, OK, we know you're not going to give us assault weapons, but can we just have included that limiting the size of the magazines, the bullet magazines that you put on assault weapons, like to reduce them to maybe 10? But they said absolutely. You know, they weren't going for that. So, as I say, it's more optics in my view, and certainly in the view of a lot of gun control advocates, than anything else. It may help a little bit, but it's going nowhere near where it needs to go.
Marion, thank you very much for joining us today on the programme. That's Marion McKeown.
Today with Claiborne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.